So I'm doing my property management hat. And I told the bank, at the end of the day, you got, you know, 50 units that are boarded up and down. If you want to get this back on track, you need to do this, this, this. It's going to cost $1 million. And the bank said, we are getting ready to foreclose. We are not investors. We just need to know what it's going to take. So now they knew that maybe they needed to discount their note, foreclose on it, and fire sell it, which is what they were going to do. And I said, well, there's the other option is foreclose it, carry a note back, because I learned that from John Gibson, and I'll give you $1 million.
Hey, freedom fighters. Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast, the only place where military members, veterans, and their families learn how to build wealth through real estate investing. I'm your host, Mike Foster, and I'm here to show you how to stop wasting your benefits. Now get off your ass, step up to the firing line, and make ready for today's lesson. Shooter standby. Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to the Active Duty Passive Income Podcast. We have an amazing treat today. I cannot wait to get to our guest. But before we do it, I will be remiss if I didn't rag on Kevin on his amazing choice of service. Bro, what is going on Air Force life, man? You're the Pentagon. What's been going on?
Air Force life is pretty good right now. I got the good job, cushy job. Lets me do a little cushy real estate action. Yeah, cushy seat. Yeah, it's really cushy. It's got the Air Force emblem in it. It's great. But what I also got going on is my Airbnb launched. We launched it last week. And we got like four bookings in like the first day.
Yes.
So haven't screwed it up yet. So things are looking up.
That's good, man. That's awesome.
A lot of excitement going there on the Airbnb side of the house. I love it. Love it. Love it. So definitely excited for today's guest. Guys, you have to listen to this episode because I know it's gonna be so amazing. It's gonna ring so true. If you guys remember, we brought on David Toupin back in episode 85. And it was an awesome story about how this gentleman started at 21 and built his millionaire empire and all his real estate. And he talked about his mentor. Well, guys, guess what? We have his mentor here on the show.
And you finally found me.
Finally got him, right?
And it wasn't a myth.
Yeah. I thought it was a myth, but nope.
That's it. Nah, he's alive. He's here. He is amazing. And I'm so excited to introduce Glenn Gonzalez. What's going on, sir?
Hey, Mike, Kevin, thanks so much for having me on this. I'm really, really excited about being here. It's interesting because I appreciate what you guys do and what you stand for. And honestly, what you're doing for all the military guys out there, kind of helping improve their personal lives and situation and inspiring and giving hope is tremendous. You know, my dad served in the Air Force, much like Kevin, right? And my grandfather was in the Army, you know, and he was in World War II. And he shared with me some of his experiences because my grandpa and I got to be very, very close. Taught me to fish, and I used to go on vacations with him and my grandma. And I remember just my grandfather talking to me a little bit about when he was digging a foxhole and a mortar went off behind him. And so he's got a lot of shrapnel in his body, but they threw him on a stretcher and they were running him back to the tent, and he got shot twice while they were running him off, And he lived to talk about it. My grandpa got a Purple Heart, and you know, he told me that story kind of firsthand. And he cried as he talked about it because the people around him that he was serving with, weren't so lucky. They couldn't talk about it. So any my gratitude for what you two are doing and all those guys that you that you inspire. I'm just so grateful. So
Thank you, man.
It's all gotta take a deep breath. I gotta take a drink of water here.
Oh,
so
man. Starting these emotions early, man. This is crazy. I gotta
But we love stories like that because it, you know, it kind of resets us. You know,
we
always talk about passive income and generational wealth and all that stuff. But to get someone like you who hasn't directly served but is just so grateful for the service that not just Mike and I, but the family that, you know, whatever, if you're in, if your family's in, everyone knows someone that's in the military.
We do.
And, and it's all about giving back, you know, because us and everyone else, we put our lives on the line and, you know, we do it to protect the nation. And I think, you know, your grandfather is some more than others, obviously. And your grandfather is
one of those
exceptionally commendable.
Absolute legend.
One of those, the greatest generation.
Yeah, and now we live in a fantastic world in a fantastic nation where there's lots of opportunities. You know, I just by way of introduction, I kind of started off as a maintenance guy in this industry, you know, and while I was going to school and I was trying to figure things out, I was painting apartments and fixing toilets and picking up trash out on the grounds, you know, and just doing, you know, basic make readies and while I was trying to figure out life. And I remember one time just saying, hey, you know, I would always see the manager or the leasing agent in the office, you know, they're talking on the phone and I'm freezing my butt out there carrying a bucket of paint and a paintbrush. And, you know, I'm like, I just wish I had that job. So finally, I one time stopped, you know, my boss's boss, you know, the manager's boss, and said, you know, hey, while you're here, you know, I want to be a manager someday. And they kind of like laughed. You're like, wait, aren't you the maintenance guy? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, why don't you go back to doing maintenance? I'm like, okay, but just keep in mind, I want to be a manager someday. Well, it wasn't that much longer that I got a call and said, you're not going to believe this, but we are looking for, we have a small 60-unit community that can't afford a full-time manager, nor can it afford a full-time maintenance guy. But if you're willing to do both, maybe we can hire you. And I'm like, sign me up.
All right.
I'm willing to do that. Right. And in my book, I talk about that experience, how maybe I wasn't the best maintenance guy, but I had to answer to the tenants because the maintenance guy screwed up and, you know, didn't get the apartment ready just right. And so I was learning some pretty hard life lessons. Really, you need a good manager and a good maintenance guy. But that dream was always out there. It's like, I want to be doing something more with my life than I feel like I was currently doing.
Right.
And those were the beginnings for me when I got into property management. That was my foot in the door.
And when you were doing this, when the tenants would complain to the management office, would you tell them, I'm going to get that maintenance guy and I'm going to square him away? And then were you playing mommy versus daddy? Because I would love that. I would just love that story. Be like, I'm going to get that guy. I'm going to straighten him out.
Yeah. You know what? You know, Kevin, it's funny you say that. I'll tell you a true story. And I share it in my book. You know, my job as a maintenance guy was to get the apartment ready for move-in, right? So that everything worked and people would move in. But back in the day, they would have a move-in checklist, right? That they would go through and make sure that everything works. And they would turn that in to the manager so that they wouldn't be held responsible for if the stove wasn't working. They noted that and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, they turned in this list. It had a few items on there, maybe not a few, maybe a bunch. I don't know. It was a long time ago, but they're like, I don't know who did this, got this apartment ready, but he didn't do a very good job. And I'm just like, you know what? I'll take care of that for you. I'll get, you know, write all that. And they're like, okay, thank you. So, you know, a few hours later, I was hoping they would be at work, right? So I show up with my tools. And I show up and I knock on the door, just make sure nobody was home. I was going to go in and they answer the door and they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, I'm the same maintenance guy that did this, you know, before he moved in. And I heard your complaint earlier. And then there was this
crawling up my butt.
Silence. Yeah.
Man.
It was like, so that was you. And I'm like, yeah, that was me. And now you're here to fix it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to try. I'm like, good luck.
Yeah. Well,
true story.
The story is you got your foot in the door, right?
Yeah, I got my foot in the door. And it all started when I raised my hand and said, I want to do something more than I'm currently doing. That's how it all started. And I kind of talk about that in the book. I talk about the value of you. And before you can move forward, you got to look backwards, right? And I think that I was a better manager because of my experience as a maintenance guy. You know, and I bet you some of these military guys are gaining skills out there in the military, left and right, but at the same time, kind of thinking, I want more for my life, right? And, you know, and what you guys are teaching and presenting on how to get into the multifamily and investing, it all starts kind of with a dream.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you took that next step, which is, you know, putting yourself out there, which a lot of people are afraid to do, you know? Yeah, but if you don't put your intentions out there into the universe, you can't allow the universe to conspire to help you out, right?
And that's right.
I absolutely love that's exactly what you did. And it does speak to a lot of our audience. I mean, most of the junior enlisted in the military community are maintenance men. In some way, shape, or form. They're maintenance for aircraft, they're maintenance for ships, maintenance for tanks, maintenance for weapons and ammunition, you name it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure every one of them have experienced the same thing that you just said, right?
Yeah.
At some point, I want to manage because I want a better life than what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I also love how you were talking about looking back before looking forward. And that's kind of something that you know, they, when you step up, whether you're becoming an NCO or you're becoming an officer, they always say, make sure you spend time doing the job that your airmen, Marines, soldiers and sailors are doing.
Absolutely.
Spend some time doing that so you get that perspective and you can take those lessons from it and then know what it's like. And you know, I always do that when I go to a new job. I find out what the airmen are doing and I try to replicate that. And just to know where they're coming from when they're coming at me with you know, whatever they need, I have that perspective.
Yep. And I had an experience one time. I was, that very first management job I had, I actually turned the property around and it was performing financially very, very well. So actually my boss in the end was very happy, you know, even though I wasn't the best maintenance guy and I didn't understand the computer side of it very well, but you know, I knew what I needed to do and we had success. So then they gave me this opportunity. Like, hey, we have this larger property. It's, I think it was almost 300 units or something.
Oh, wow. And
we're really struggling with the leasing. Can you, well, don't jump ahead. I didn't get the job to go manage it, but they wanted my, I'm like, I wish that would be awesome.
It's got a really clogged toilet.
Yeah. It's got a really clogged toilet. We're sending you over there. It's funny you say that because it did have major issues. They were not leasing any apartments. I mean, it was really struggling and the rest of the apartments are doing very well. And they're like, hey, Glenn, will you just go over there and just give us your opinion? Tell us what you think. And I went over there, I did a bunch of work, did a bunch of analysis, talked to the team. And you know what I found out in a nutshell is the leasing agent was not very good at leasing apartments. She couldn't connect with people, didn't have the personality, kind of lazy. And I kind of shared that feedback with the property manager. I said, you know, I think this is part of your problem. And she said to me, I think you're right, but there's nothing I can do about it because she's my friend.
Ooh.
I said, ooh, what a tough spot to be in.
That is.
I said, well, listen, Miss Manager, I'm no expert here, but if you don't solve this problem, either she's going to go away or they're going to get rid of you. One of the two. You know, so, and she's like, well, I'm not going to let that happen. I said, well, then I suggest you take a real hard look at it because if part of being the manager is you have to make some management decisions. And sure enough, they made a change with the leasing agent. And believe it or not, the leasing just started going right up right away. They were leasing lots of apartments. And the manager, you know, later said, thank you. But the feedback that I gave to my boss's boss, the regional manager, they just said, hey, you really have a knack for this. You know, I mean, you got natural talent there. Well, that just opened up another door where then I got to oversee multiple properties. So,
nice.
I mean, yeah, you know, and before you know it, I'm in property management. I graduate college. I was supposed to be a hospital administrator and I went to school for that. I did an internship for that. And I'm like, I want to be in property management. I don't want to be a hospital administrator. And I'm like,
well, all right.
You know, it's like, yeah, I mean that, I mean, it took me 6 years to get a 4-year degree that I'm not even going to use now. Now what, you know?
Right.
Big crossroads in my life. And, you know, but isn't that kind of life anyway? I mean, we
come to
crossroads and there's, you know, you can go left or you can go right. And, you know, and sometimes they don't always make sense, you know, but, you know, Lord willing, he puts some opportunities in front of you.
That's true. That is so true, man. And as long as you stay focused on that one path, right, and you allow the opportunities to open up around you in that direction, you got it.
So tell us,
you were able to go from that maintenance man to the manager. You put your dreams out there. You were able to shine in your moment of glory there. What was next? At that point that you became the property manager of all these units now, what were some of the challenges that you faced when you scaled and then eventually became your own landlord?
Yeah, great question. You know, they're all kind of stepping stones. And really, I took several years, and let's just call it, I think, 10 or 15 years to perfect my craft.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to be in property management, I want to be very good at property management. So I got my real estate license. I got my my CPM designation, which stands for Certified Property Manager. And that designation is issued from the Institute of Real Estate Management, you know, called the IREM. And these credentials and certificates opened up opportunities for me. And it got me networking with bigger companies. Well, I originally was with some smaller property management companies. I got recruited and I got a job offer to go work for a REIT, a real estate investment trust. So here I was managing and overseeing, call it 1,800 to 2,000 apartments in a portfolio. Now I got a job to go work as a regional manager. So a lower title, but much more responsibility. I'm now a regional manager for a REIT overseeing, you know, anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 apartments. Wow. Right. And so my salary went up and again, trying to perfect my craft. I'm really trying to work on, you know, being really good at what I did. So I did. I got really good at property management. Well, when you're really good at property management, you could fix up a property and you can increase its performance and you can make it more valuable. Well, these owners that owned them, I saw the checks they were getting. They were getting big checks from the distributions from the performance of the property. And those owners were thrilled with me. Matter of fact, they were so thrilled, they eventually sold their apartment community and made a big fat profit. And they got a check in the bank and I got a pat on the back. Thank you, Glenn. Wow. Did a great job. And I'm like,
Dang, man.
Exactly. It's like, so, you know, and the whole time I'm thinking to myself, you know, gosh, the rich just get richer and the poor just keep getting poorer, right? And I'm like, this is not fair. So I had a wise boss that said, hey, look, I want you to get more involved in the industry. And I'm like, that's true. And so I really didn't want to because she wanted me to volunteer my time to the apartment association, which at first I'm like, we're going to find time in my day to volunteer. Right. But I did. And sure enough, I met some really cool people. So here's one of the lessons and maybe one of the nuggets from the bonus. I'm fast forwarding, but you put yourself in the right place at the right time. And I'm sitting on this association with all these other people donating their time. And a guy named John Gibson became kind of my mentor. He was an owner. He owned all these apartment complexes. And I knew I wanted to be like John someday. So I was talking with John and I said, I'm thinking about buying a small 60-unit apartment complex. And I ran these numbers and it was for sale. And I showed it to him. And he said, you'll probably do okay. Not great, but you'll probably do okay. He said, but I have another deal for you. I'm like, what's that? He goes, I own this little 44-unit apartment complex in Washington. It's called Puyallup, Washington. And he's like, I haven't been there, seen it for a year or so, but I know it's not performing very well. And I'm like, well, why do you want me to buy it? He goes, because I know you're good at property management. You could turn around and make some money. You want to buy it, I'll sell it to you on a contract, but you have to come up with a $150,000 down payment. And I'm like, ooh, and I'm like, $150,000.
Where are you going to get that?
Exactly.
As a property manager, right?
Yeah. I'm like, I have kids. I live paycheck to paycheck. Right? And so I went and I talked to my boss and she's like, you're really good at these numbers and you're dead on. You're right. This thing's going to make a lot of money. And I said, I need to find $150,000. So I want to go in partners with you, my boss, and another friend of mine, which was a vendor in the business named Scott. I'm like, hey, why don't we go in, you know, a third, and you put up 75,000 and you put up 75,000. And they're like, how much are you going to put up? And I'm like, zero. They're like, wait. You want to be a third, but you're not putting any money and you want us to put up all the money? I'm like, yes. And they asked me, like, how does that work? I said, well, I found the deal. It's going to make money. You guys get paid before I get paid. What do you got to lose? And they said, true. So $150,000, bought the property. And John, my mentor, going back to John, right? I just happened to be in the right place at the right time out there networking the industry. He said, I actually don't want you to give me the $150,000. I want you to put it into the property so it'll be even nicer than it was before.
Oh,
man. Right, a little twist. So he was smart, right? He got us not only to do the deal, but he also kind of forced us to make some improvements on the property that he was carrying a note for. So if we failed, the property is a little more fixed up than it was before. He's smart.
So he can refinance and he's covered.
Yeah. Yep. So we fixed it up. We did what we needed to do. And my boss, Carrie, helped and Scott helped. And we all kind of jumped in. And we sold it, I think, a year or a year and a half later for $1 million more than we paid for it.
Wow.
Nice.
There you go.
Right? So all of a sudden, I had no money. And now I returned to my boss and my friend their money. And we ended up carrying a note back for a half a million. But we had the other money to put in our pocket. And the sad part of the story is I lost that other note that we carried to the guy. So even though we made a million, actually lost a half a million in the same success story. But how much money did I really make? Still made a half million, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at, well, you did good, but you could have done better. Well, I didn't know that back in the day that you really shouldn't carry a note for potential buyers. But that's a whole nother story. You can read about that in my book. But,
all right.
Toss that out there anyway. So there it was, in the right place at the right time. Go ahead, Kevin.
So Glenn, you keep saying this, right place, right time. But I would actually argue that you put yourself into that position because remember, you know, you said, oh, well, my boss wants me to volunteer.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever. And you're like, ugh, do I really have to? But you went there and you, like you did when you raised your hand and said, I want to, you know, hey, owner guy, I want to be like you someday. You probably did the same thing. You're either putting off the right body language or you went up and talked to someone or you're, you know, like we say, networking and all this stuff. You were there and that opportunity came to you. And you pounced and you took it. So,
I love
you know, people always say, well,
totally agree.
You got to force it. Yeah. You got to force it. You got to force yourself into these conversations as awkward or as weird, or a lot of self-defeating thoughts go through our heads. Like, oh God, I don't deserve to be here. I don't deserve to be talking to John Gibson or Glenn Gonzalez, but here we are, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And so you're really, it's not, you're exactly right, Kevin. No, I was going to make that point earlier, you know, it wasn't lucky. It was, I put myself out there. I was networking. I found a mentor and I was rubbing shoulders with people that I wanted to be someday. Right. I mean, the end of the day, that's what I was hoping to do and be. And you can go to event after event after event and you're just meeting all kinds of new people. Don't think that's a waste of time. That's part of the process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Part of the process. Yep. So.
It absolutely is. I love it. It's that like cookie crumbs to success.
Hey guys, Kevin here. And I wanted to take a quick break from the show to fill you in on what's happening behind the scenes at Active Duty Passive Income. Most of you already know that ADPI is not just a podcast. We're a community of real estate and passive income warriors taking action, building wealth, and giving back together. That's why I'm so proud to announce the creation of ADPI's Financial Services Division. With a full range of tailored lending options, our team of pros is ready to provide active duty service members, veterans, and military families just like you all the advice and resources you need to close on your first or next investment opportunity. Click the link in this episode's show notes or simply text DEAL to 33777 to get connected today. Now, let's get back to the show.
So tell us real quick about your first deal. Like not the one that you organized there, but the one that you, or maybe not even first deal, a recent deal, right? Let's take a look. Yeah. Let's take a look now at the investor that you've become because of the success that you took.
Starting out. Yeah. So, you know, I was working as a property manager still, right? Even after that little 44 unit deal, I was still a W-2 employee and I had invested a lot of money in the market, and I bought some rental homes, and I over-leveraged them. I put as little down as I could and got lots of debt. And when the market went down in 2008, 2009 in Seattle, Washington, I lost 4 properties to short sale and foreclosure, right? Mm-hmm. I had an option there, right? A fork in the road. I could be depressed, woe is me, or I could put on my big boy pants and try to figure out how to navigate through this. I had a heart-to-heart talk with my wife. We were living too high on the hog. We had too much debt, and we were not learning the lessons that other people were telling us, which was stay out of debt, don't live beyond your means, and figure out the difference between want and need. Like I wanted a new car, and I got a new car. I wanted a boat, and I got a boat. But when the time came and it was a tough economy, guess what? I lost all of that stuff. Wow. Right? Bad, poor decisions. So I learned that lesson. So anyway, I moved to Texas. I start over. I start running a property management company for a guy. And he passed on an opportunity that he had to the bank called and says, hey, you know, we need to get rid of this. We're foreclosing. Well, that bank called me and said, you're pretty good at property management. You have a reputation. Will you tell us what it will take to turn this around? I said, sure. So I'm doing my property management hat. And I told the bank at the end of the day, you got, you know, 50 units that are boarded up and down. If you want to get this back on track, you need to do this, this, this. It's going to cost $1 million. And the bank said, we are getting ready to foreclose. We are not investors. We just need to know what it's going to take. So now they knew that maybe they needed to discount their note, foreclose on it, and fire sell it, which is what they were going to do. And I said, well, there's the other option is foreclose it, carry a note back, because I learned that from John Gibson. And I'll give you $1 million and I'll fix the property. They said, you'd do that? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? You know what they asked me? Do you have $1 million? I'm like, no, I don't have $1 million. If I had $1 million, do you think I'd be working as a property manager?
Right.
Oh, they said, well, you certainly have a reputation. Yeah, you certainly have a reputation. So the bank told me, well, you don't have $1 million. How does that work? I'm like, I'll go raise it. All right. You raise $1 million. We'll foreclose and give you the property and you could be the owner. Great. So I lined, you know, right. I hooked up with a friend of mine and he and I started raising money. And here's it was a 200 unit deal. It was in San Antonio, Texas. I had to raise $1 million. And we just started calling and networking, and 9 out of 10 people would tell us no. And here's why they told us no. They're like, have you ever syndicated a deal before as an owner? And my answer was, no, I haven't. This is my first one, really. You know, and I've been in property management, so I know it's a good deal. And like, we trust you, and it looks like a good deal. But if you never syndicated, we're not putting our money with you.
Dang.
So I know, right? And I'm like, well, that's not good. So what do you do then, right? Wow. Another crossroads. We've talked about crossroads. So I said to those guys, hey, I know you're not. Can you think of anybody that might? And they said, yeah, you might want to call Joe or John. They're friends. They're investors. They take a little riskier deal. Call them. So I did call those guys, and some of them said yes, and some of them said no. For every no I got, I asked for 2 or 3 more phone numbers of somebody who they thought might. Guess what? At the end of the day, we raised $1 million. We bought that 200 unit deal. We managed it, fixed it up, just like I said we would. And all of our investors got a 48 IRR, 48 internal rate of
return. Right? Let's go.
Right. And now I'm off to the races, right? So I'm like, forget working. What I made on that one apartment complex is what I would have had to have worked at my old job for 4 or 5 years, my annual salary. Mm-hmm. And I made almost 5 times that on one deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So at that point, I'm like, I don't ever want to go back work for a W-2 again at that point.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
But I could have been a one and done, or I could have hit the ground running. So then I started calling all of my people that I've made over my, this is where looking back helps you and look forward. I started talking to everybody I knew in the past, and they said, oh, I know a property you could buy. You could buy this one, or, oh, I know this, or I know that. And really what happened is we bought 2 or 3 deals and we raised the money and it was going well. An old friend of mine that I met 10 years earlier in an arm's length relationship on that 44 units that I bought in Puyallup, Washington. He called me. He's like, Glenn, you told me someday if I ever want to sell my management company, you know, to call you. I want to sell. And I'm like, well, that's great, Ed. And I was like, but to be honest with you, it's been a while and I'm really good at property management. I don't need a buyer management company. I can start one, you know, with my eyes closed. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, I think I need to retire. I said, now, Ed, you have 8 different apartment complexes in Dallas. You sell me those 8 and I will agree to buy your management company from you. He's like, okay.
Nice.
All right. So here's where it gets real, guys, right?
Oh, man.
I bought a 100 unit deal. I had to raise $1 million. A lot of people told me no. I bought a couple small in between ones. Then all of a sudden, you know how much money I had to raise to buy? How much money I needed to raise from investors in order to buy 8 apartment communities? I had to raise $22 million from investors.
Wow. $22 million.
That's almost unthinkable with no line of sight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, it wasn't that much longer that I was a maintenance guy. And here I am buying apartment complexes. And here I am, you know, so, you know, that came directly through a relationship. Ed and I were friends and I just threw it out there. Hey, if you ever want to sell your properties or your management company, I'll buy it. No different than when I was a maintenance guy and I told my boss, hey, I don't want to be a maintenance guy anymore. I want to be a property manager. It's a common thread. You got to put yourself out there a little bit, guys. You got to talk about what your dreams are. And then you got to become an expert at your craft. I mean, it took me a long time to be good at what I was doing. But some people want to just jump out of their W-2 and start doing their own deals and be an entrepreneur. And for some, that's a great path. For others, if you can work on a W-2 for a number of years, you can learn some serious skills that can be your skills for the rest of your life, you know? And maybe that's part of the plan. Let me just be really good at what I do, but you've got a goal in mind. Like, I always knew someday I wanted to be that owner that owned the apartment complex. I don't know how. I don't know how it was going to happen, but it was always a dream. Matter of fact, I have a whole chapter in my book that talks about, are you a doer or a dreamer? But it all starts with a dream. You know,
all starts with a dream. Glenn, what you've said has resonated with my soul. I can't even tell you all the goosebumps I'm getting over here. Like, yes. It is just incredible because you started from the lowest spot and you worked your way up strategically. You found all the cookie crumbs, the people to network with, the things to do. You had the creativity to see past these difficult barriers, all because of one philosophy. You don't live life by sight. You got to live by faith. You have to put yourself out there and find some creative solutions to dream big and accomplish big, and everything around you will happen. I'm telling you guys, this is it. This is it. This is exciting. How you go from maintenance man to millionaire. You've got to do exactly this, man.
Yeah. And the principles are all the same. You know what I mean? Talk to a lot of, you know, wealthy people, business guys, they all do the same thing. They network, they have a dream, they go get educated, they become good at what they do, and they go for it, right? It's a common denominator.
I love where you started, you know, and you're like, well, I had this JV on this 44 unit deal because literally on, what day is today? Tuesday. On Friday, I put in my first LOI for a 30 unit deal. And it's the same situation. I went to my investor and said, hey, listen, I'm putting all the sweat equity in, but I need, you know, we need $600,000 make this thing a go. And they looked at me and they're like, well, wait, what are you doing with it? And I said the same exact line that you did. And I was like, what do you got to lose? And they're like, what do you have? It's a good deal. But that whole thing, when you raise money, and Glenn, you know this, it's not, you're not asking for money. You're providing an opportunity for people to make a ton of money, you know? So it's just, if you got the deal, it's just communication. It's just communication. It's just phenomenal.
And real estate is a good cash flow thing. I mean, people pay rent every month, you know, whether you're sleeping or you're out on a cruise ship with your wife or kids or whatever, you know, they still pay rent every month. They have no choice, right? And people still need housing. So it's a good venue to put money in and earn cash flow along the way. Yeah. It doesn't always go as smooth as possible. I've lost money in real estate, you know, but you have to really... You know, people ask me, how do you get started? And my suggestion is, I got a whole nother chapter of the book just about good partners and bad partners.
Right.
You know, sometimes there are people that have done this before you that are good at it And it doesn't hurt to partner with somebody that's done it once or twice and learn along the way. That's an option too, right? Because people are like, I know I can do this, but I really would feel more comfortable if I just partnered with somebody who's done it a bunch of times. And I had that. I had a guy that locked up 184 units. He called me. He's like, Glenn, your name keeps coming up in these circles. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, the lender likes the deal, but they're concerned that it was my first deal. So they really didn't want to give me a Fannie Mae loan. And I'm like, I'm Fannie approved. And I'm like, yeah, that's weird. And then they said that some investors that would like the deal, but they're like, you as a sponsor on 184 units for your first deal, if you had a little more experience, you know, maybe we would do it. So they said, you know, maybe if you were partners with Glenn, you know, we might approve the deal. So he called me. He's like, dude, your name keeps coming up. And I understand the lenders know you and investors know you. I'm like, yeah, everyone knows me. So they're like, would you like to be my partner? And I said, let me look at the numbers. He looked at the numbers and he had a good enough deal. So I said, yes, let's be partners. So he did all the work. He found the deal. We partnered up. We split stuff amongst the two of us. Now he's got his first deal and I'm in on it with him. And I'm actually looking over his shoulder and I point things out all the time. What about this? What about this? What about that? And of course he's like, I didn't think about that. Or, oh yeah, or now what are we going to do? You know, all these little things when you get into it, you know, once you start owning them, then you got to asset manage them. And that's a whole nother episode for you guys, you know?
Yeah, right. True. That's true. But Glenn, we really appreciate you coming on and sharing all this wisdom. This is amazing. Yeah. We want to give you real quick, please talk a little bit more about your book. If there's anything that you wanted to say and share with us.
You know, the book's called Maintenance Man to Millionaire. And really it's my life's journey that shared some of those stories that I shared with you guys tonight, but it's also about my successes and my failures, right? Because you could really learn. I've learned a lot from the School of Hard Knocks. You know, absolutely. I didn't graduate from some Ivy League. I really learned from the ground up, and there's some things that I would do differently. I know this, you know, I'm a religious man. Some of your listeners may or may not be, but you know, when it got really tough, I hit my knees and I asked for help from on high, you know, from the good Lord. And I'll be honest with you, I got inspiration along the way and would probably do things that I wouldn't normally do because I felt it was directed by inspiration and it seemed to bless my life, you know, amen. Right. So, I got to give credit where credit's due. And, my book is on Amazon. You know, it's cheap. You could just download it or you could just get a printed copy. You know, you can get it in 3 days or something like that. And I don't know, there's just a lot of good life lessons in there. And I hope people that enjoy it. There's a whole chapter on facing challenges and adversities because we're faced from all these different obstacles that are presented in our lives. And for a lot of people are like, dude, I did not sign up for this, or this is too hard, or I'm not going to be able to get past this. And, well, at least I gave it a good try. Well, I got a whole chapter dedicated to, you know, either going over the obstacles or around the obstacles or finding ways to, you know, face those challenges. And we all have them. Life throws stuff. You know, for me, my wife was dying. She had to get a double lung transplant. And I was trying to build a business while my wife was dying, you know, and I had to find some sort of balance. And you can read about it in the book, but I mean, when she was at the hospital and she was awake, I was holding her hand and I was all in with my wife, anything I could do to support her. But when she was out cold or under, I had my laptop open and I'm like, if she's going to fight for her life, dang it. I'm going to provide a living for her so she'll be more comfortable. Amen. If and when she gets through this, right? So, amen. You know, everybody's motivated by different things. And my wife's strength kind of motivated me to work hard. If she could fight that hard for her life, I owe it to her and to others to fight just as hard. So I've got a whole chapter on facing obstacles and gosh, you guys got me worked up twice on this episode. I don't know.
This is amazing, man. This is where all the magic happens.
No, but we love this passion.
Oh,
this
man.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is real. This is real.
I love it.
Well, should we hop into the bonus round, Mike?
Let's hop into the bonus round. Yeah, no, we've taken too much every time, we know, but this is so amazing. I cannot wait to release this, man. We've got four final questions for you, Glenn, even though I feel like our listeners already know that you are, right?
But yeah.
What's your favorite book?
Gosh, there's a whole bunch, but recently I read this one book called My One Word or The One Word. Mm-hmm. And it just talks about what is the one word that you can apply to your life that's going to help you in all areas of your life. You know, without giving too much away in the book, it's a short read. You can only read it in an hour or less. But my one word was self-discipline. I needed to exercise. I needed to focus on my work. I needed to get up a little earlier. I needed to eat better. You know, I set all these goals. And the book teaches you, it's like, yeah, what is the one thing that you need to do that will be applicable? For some people, it's focus. For some people, it's self-discipline. For some people, it's forgiveness. I don't know. But it was a great book. It inspired me so much. I actually bought copies for my friends and just said, here, you need to read this. I got one for Dave Tupin. I got one for Alex. I got one for my son-in-law, Mike. And just, I loved it. So there you go. Awesome.
All right. Yeah. All right. There will be a link to that in the show notes page. As well, guys, there will be a link to Glenn's book in the show notes page too. So make sure that you go and click that. But
thank you, guys. I appreciate that.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
We always support our guests.
For sure.
We always support our guests.
Yeah.
But all right. Question number two, who is your biggest hero and why?
Oh, my biggest hero has got to be Heidi right now. My wife, right? Because, you know, she got her double lung transplant a little over 4 years ago, and she is just facing it straight on with all the strength and energy that she can muster. And it's changed the perspective in my life, because we used to, like any marriage, right? I mean, there would be little pet peeves or there would be little things that bother you. But then the things that used to bug me, you know, when she was in the hospital going through all this, I realized as I was home, if she was gone, those little things that bug me would be gone too. And I would actually miss them. Wow. So now the things that bug me, I'm actually grateful for, because it reminds me my wife is still here. She's still, so actually.
That changed your perspective.
You got to change your perspective, right?
So it is.
You know, she's my hero. She fights, you know, and, you know, I have lots of heroes, guys. You know, I mean, my mentors have been my heroes. My savior is my hero. My wife's my hero. You guys are my heroes right now, because you're letting me on this. And I think what you're doing for all those other military guys is fantastic. You know, the world needs more guys like you guys. So.
Well, the world needs more.
That's a lot of answers for one hero.
Hey, that's completely fine. And the world needs more guys like you, man. Guys who are not afraid to dream big and go for gold, do it well, and then give back. Because that's what it all comes down to, right?
That's what this is, you know? I mean, I agreed to be out here because I feel blessed. And I just, if I can help somebody overcome some obstacles someday or inspire them to step out of their comfort zone or dream big, gosh, then I feel like I'm doing what John Gibson did for me one day, you know?
Right. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yep.
All right. Question number three. What do you like to do for fun?
Oh, today I went for a bicycle ride. I'm training to ride 100 miles in April on my bicycle. Wow. It's a century ride in April. Awesome. And so I rode bike, you know, two or three times a week. Today I did about 20 miles. And on Saturday I'm going to do about 30 miles. And I'm going to get up to the point where I can do 40 or 50. I love to go boating. I have a boat and I live in Texas, of course. So I shoot guns all the time. And my kids were here from Seattle and they're grown men at this point. And for Christmas, I gave them Tannerite, right? And they thought, what is the Tannerite? This stuff you could just blows up, you know, and you can buy it over the counter in Texas. So
that's right. I've never heard of that.
Of course you can. Tannerite. All right. Yeah, it's a C4.
Yeah, exactly. And it's small.
Awesome.
Of course. Right over the counter.
With the gun and kaboom. And, you know,
all of our listeners in Texas think that we're all crazy.
Yeah, they do.
Me and Mike never been in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Come on out, guys, and I'll take you in. We'll go shoot some Tannerite. That's a true story. I'll take both of you.
Let's do it. All right.
I like to
shoot. Let's do it.
That's my life. I, you know, of course, family and all that other stuff. But those are my hobbies, and it's fun.
So. That's awesome, man. All right. And then the final question. What three nuggets of wisdom do you have to give to those who are just getting started?
Yeah, great, great question. I kind of alluded to them earlier. One, find a mentor or two. Somebody that is doing what you want to do. Put yourself out there, go network, develop relationships. And then the other one is, you know, perfect your craft. Whatever it is you do, it doesn't matter what skill you're in, be dang good at that one thing. And be really good at it. And I don't care if you're a maintenance guy putting together airplanes or, you know, servicing the ships or whatever, or the galleys. I don't care. If you're the cook, be really good at what you do. Be an expert at your craft. And don't be ashamed of who you are. And then, you know, I think the final one is this. and this is very important, figure out the difference between a want and a need. Because honestly, if you need a new car, you probably don't need a brand new car. You probably need a car that's dependable. You may want a new car and all that other stuff. You may want a bigger house. You know, to figure out what the difference is need and want. And over time, if you can figure out how to put some money away and live beneath your means, you will eventually be wealthy.
I love that.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
No. That is amazing advice, guys.
And it's hard to do. It is very, very hard to do. It is very hard to do. Yeah. And I still try and practice it today, and I have more money than I've ever had, and I still try to practice the same principle. I don't live in a big mansion. I don't have an airplane. I am a pilot, though, Mr. Air Force guy. I am a private pilot, and I do like to fly as a hobby, but I have not.
I fly a nice cubicle. Yeah. And my job.
I'm glad he said it, because I was definitely going to go in there and dig it. That's going to be a stab. But it's so
that's cool. Awesome. Those are my nuggets. I love you guys. I think you guys are fantastic, man. This has been one of the funnest podcasts I've been on in a long, long time.
Glenn, you are fantastic, man. And we really appreciate you sharing all this wisdom with us and this book with our listeners. Guys, yeah. I'm telling you, you need to go into the show notes, right? Just scroll down from whatever podcast you're listening to and click the link that'll take you to this guy's book, Maintenance Man to Millionaire. You need to read it, all right? And then we want to hear about what you did with it, right? Take a picture with the book. Post it on our Facebook group. Show us your support. We want to send all those pictures to Glenn.
And you know what's so funny is I go back, and when people leave comments or reviews on the book on Amazon, I will read every one of those, because some of them, many of them just inspire me, on what they're getting out of this. And it's really quite humbling. And I express a lot of gratitude for people who share their, what they're getting out of it. Cause it's kind of cool. So
I love that.
And guys, while you're there, clicking on links and copying these books, why don't you go and leave this podcast a review on Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars, give us whatever stars you want, just rate and review us, because that is how we can get this word out, Glenn's story out to everyone. It's just how the podcast industry works. We love you for it. We know we have those diehard listeners out there, and we just want to get this message out to everyone. And like the higher you go up in the rankings, it shows up more, and it's just awesome. Everyone wins. So we would totally appreciate that.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Glenn, thank you so much again. How can our listeners contact you or your team?
You know what? I'll just tell you my cell phone number. You can put it out there to the whole world. A lot of people don't do that.
Bold, Cotton.
It is, beep, 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 beep. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's 512-937-5964. And my email is glenn@obsidiancapitalco.com. So obsidiancapitalco.com.
Awesome. And we'll put those in the show notes page, guys, so you guys will be able to have it there too. Glenn, you're amazing. Thank you so much.
You guys were a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on your show, guys. I appreciate
it. Thank you for coming.
Anytime.
For sure. Take care. Outstanding. That was an awesome episode. Thanks so much to our special guest, and thanks to you for listening. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, make sure you go and do that. Or schedule a call with us by texting ADPI to 444-999 or checking out our website at www.activedutypassiveincome.com to find out how you can get started on your financial freedom journey today. I'll see you guys next week.